It is the Batter Up Podcast for the 10th day of September 2020. Will Pelagia, Caleb Johnson, and Joe Patrick as we get you set for the final 17 days of the Major League Baseball regular season, even on the advent of the day that we start football. The baseball season is heating up, and it was heating up at Truist Park on Wednesday night with a Braves score, a franchise record 29 runs. We hope to be just as prolific with you in our half-hour discussion today. We say hello to you, Joe Patrick.
Hey, Willie P. How's it going, man?
We are well. Hello, Caleb Johnson.
What's going on?
I don't know what to make of last night, guys, because after two games against the Marlins that looked very suspect at best, especially against Sixto Sanchez Tuesday night, the offense explodes just by having the infusion of Ozzie Albies. It was very encouraging to see. And it also makes me wonder what games are going to look like after September the 27th. We talk a lot about how playoff baseball is different and the fact that pitching continues to dominate. I just don't know if it's going to take that same jump that it does in normal seasons, because so many teams have the same problem the Braves had. I almost feel like the playoffs will act as an extension of the regular season, and we're going to have games like this, and I think that puts the Braves in pretty good position. React as you may.
It just feels weird, the fact that we're almost done with the season. Like, that's what I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around. It's like, we have a game like this, and I want to say, well, I mean, this is just, you know, flash in the pan, just, you know, odd night kind of deal.
Right.
But, I mean, it's more of a big deal because we're headed so close to the end of the season, and it's a National League East opponent.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the last couple games against the Marlins they were very frustrating games to watch because the team was not really hitting with when they got opportunities with runners in scoring position, and it was just happening over and over again. And I think that honestly made the offense maybe look a little bit worse than we know what this offense is. We know this has been a team that's absolutely carried by the offense. It's certainly not getting carried by the pitching. So it was kind of fun. Obviously, it was very fun to see everything that happened in the game last night, to just kind of see the floodgates open. But I think that it's symbolic of what this team is, you know, to win a game, 29-9 or whatever the final score was. Just kind of crazy. By the way, we got a Skorigami in that game. The first Skorigami since 1999, I want to say.
That was just
insane. 21 years since there's been a unique score in baseball.
Freddie Freeman talked about how this lineup is now so long with everybody healthy.
Our lineup is so long with everyone healthy now. It's tough. And then Snit, you know, kind of switched the lineup a little bit. I woke up to a text message saying I was hitting second today. So I guess that was the magic lineup tonight.
I personally think that this lineup is going to carry them to any success that they'll have in the postseason. And I also wonder, the flip side of that is that, you know, how many games are we going to get where it's this offense is going to have to bail out the pitching staff? Because since we last spoke, Max Fried went down. It looks like he'll be back within the next 8 or 10 days or so, at least no later than the 18th against the Baltimore Orioles. But, I mean, guys, we were at a point where we thought we had two starters. After Ian Anderson's latest slip up, we might have no starters.
I'm not going to overreact to Ian Anderson's last start and Max Fried having a rough outing. I mean, look, those things happen. And I think Snit has even talked about it previously, where you can't expect these guys to go out every time and be perfect. I'm less concerned about that and more concerned about the fact of This 29 runs that the Braves scored last night really pacified the fact that Tommy Malone was awful. I mean, it was just like...
It's happened twice now with him.
Yeah, well, and that's what's... That's honestly what's sad about the whole thing, is it's the fact that he's been in this position twice now, and he's done the exact same thing, and it's just... You know, I mean, what do you do? What are you supposed to expect a team to do? Like they're not going to score 29 runs to cover that up every time. And it's one of those. It's honestly, it's so frustrating that it's gotten to the point where like Snit doesn't even want to talk about it. Like it's just, it's not even worth discussing.
You mentioned Snit. This was him last night on Time Malone.
This is what it is. You know, Dayton came on, did a good job, and kind of settled things in. And it was, we're lucky to have Bryce down there, kind of gassed up and ready to go. He'd been extended. And so that, you know, that was good that we had, you know, we got to stay away from everybody else so that he could finish the game.
Joe, it's not exactly a calm state of affairs in terms of the Braves pitching right now.
No, I was joking with friends because I was covering the Atlanta United game last night while Caleb was on Braves duty, and I was kind of keeping up the score line when I saw they had scored like 25 runs or whatever. I texted some friends. I said, "So Melanson's getting warm, I guess." based on the way that Snitz uses bullpen, but yeah, I mean, the pitching it's rough. And it's kind of to go back to the trade deadline, I think a lot of this goes back to the conversation we were having around then, because that was when we were talking about should the Braves really put chips on, you know, in the middle of the table to bolster the starting rotation, which obviously mm-hmm. needs help. And I just continue to wonder, and I'm kind of on Alex Anthopoulos's side of this, where it's like, if you had went out and gotten Lance Lynn, for example, like, are you really feeling that much more confident than, I mean, yeah, it'd be nice to have another starting pitcher, but you're still looking at going into a playoff series being totally outmatched in the pitching department. Like, it didn't really, I don't think, matter who you got, except for Mike Clevinger. I think he's the one guy that would have really elevated a playoff starting pitching staff to a new level. So, you know, it's just tough with the way that the injuries have fallen on them. Obviously, I think the good news for the Braves in terms of the injury front is this latest one with Fried is actually seems like it's not going to be something that's long term and super debilitating. In fact, he was saying that, well, he didn't speak to the media, but apparently through Alex Anthopoulos, we can understand that there was some deliberation between Fried and the club, whether they just wanted to like have him rest a start or even like, you know, potentially pitch through something like this, but obviously there's no reason to do that. But it's just, yeah, I mean, you've turned to so many different young arms, you've turned to veterans like Malone, and just nothing seems to be coming up aces for the Braves right now in the starting staff.
We could debate the Mike Clevinger thing till the cows come home. Just simply, he's just not here. I refuse to believe that the deal wasn't there that made sense for the Braves. And again, I probably value guys like Drew Waters differently than much of the Braves fan base or the Braves organization does. It's not that I don't think he's a good player. It's just I think he's a luxury item at this point when you have other needs. And the other part of this, too, is that the reluctance to spend on prime pitching. And when I say prime pitching, I'm not talking about a 34-year-old veteran on a one-year prove-it deal. Like, go out and spend money on an actual pitcher, like a Wheeler or a Cole. I mean, I know that this organization loves to talk about how much they lose money. They're not paupers, guys. We're in the 10th largest media market in the country. Like, they're making some money. I understand a lot of it has to do with the ownership group, and many people who say that they, you know, inside that Liberty Media Group, they don't even know that they own a baseball team, and McGurk has to stand up there and be the mouthpiece for a bunch of people who don't care about whether or not this team does anything other than make money. I get all that, and I understand all that, so don't run me through the machinations of it. But when you're a fan base like the Braves, who's starved for winning, and you trot out this garbage on the mound like Tommy Malone and Newcomb and Toussaint and all this other just trash, like come on, man. Like, I can't look at this and say, you can't sit here and tell me that at least one of these pitchers who was available this past offseason couldn't have helped the Atlanta Braves. I'm just, and even when you think about the fact that they've gotten so much help with the lineup, like, this should be a team that's primed to win a World Series. And because of their reluctance to spend on pitching, we're now limping to the finish.
I'm honestly, my frustration when it comes to pitching and how it's all been dealt with is the fact of, I can't figure out what what this front office wants to do. I mean, on the one hand, they don't want to go out and give up prospects to acquire talent that is ready right now, but then they don't want to use those prospects so that we can see how they look and see if they're worth it. I'm honestly, like, throwing Sean Newcomb out there, throwing Tuki Toussaint out there, you know, throwing Ian Anderson out there. It's one of those, I am completely fine with that, because that at least we see, you know, we see the talent that's available. But why is Kyle Muller, you know, why has his name not been brought up anymore? Why is Tucker Davidson's name not been brought up anymore? And we're continuing to see guys like Tommy Malone and Robbie Erlin, you know, come back up there. And it's like, well, maybe this time will be different. And then we get through two innings and it's like, well, okay, we're looking pretty good. And then we go third and fourth inning and it all, you know, falls apart pretty much. And it's, I wonder what are they thinking? I mean, what's going to, are these guys not ready right now or what? Like, what are we dealing with? It just seems like anything would be better than what they're throwing out right now.
They did my guy Patrick Weigel dirty too, by the way.
Absolutely.
To be clear.
Yeah.
It was interesting talking to when Alex Anthopoulos was doing his conference call the other day, talking about the Max Fried situation. He started dishing a little bit on some of the other pitchers that are in the pipeline. Tucker Davidson was a guy that was specifically asked about for obvious reasons, because he's been kind of, you know, the coaching staff has talked him up, you know, back to spring training. Media members seem to really like him a lot. Obviously, he's one of the top pitchers in the pipeline. And it was kind of jarring to hear Anthopoulos just plainly state that he's kind of behind some of these other guys that we have seen in the pecking order, like Bryce Wilson, like who else did he mention he was behind? Somebody kind of mediocre that wouldn't be tantalizing. And he basically said that, you know, Tucker, he referred to him as solid, but I think that he's still worried about the fastball command with him, just not a consistent ability to throw strikes. Which is disappointing, because I think a lot of us were looking forward to seeing him. But I think that, yeah, it's just like one of the drags of this team. And to be perfectly, like, I want to say that I love watching the Braves, because they are an exciting team to watch. They've got this exciting offense. You never know when they can pop off for 6 or 7 runs in an inning, and that's really fun. But, you know, one of the drags is seeing these starting pitchers who not only do you not have confidence in them to actually go out there and perform and put the team in a winning position, but there's just not the kind of like the interest in them long term, where it's like, you know, I would rather see Sean Newcomb or somebody who has upside long term for the Braves than seeing Tommy Malone. Even like Josh Tomlin fits in that scenario where it's like, yeah, it's cool to see. Like, I'm fine with Josh Tomlin going out there and giving up 3 runs in 5 innings or whatever, but it's not really something that gets your juices flowing, you know? Like, if I'm going to see somebody give up
strikes.
If I'm going to see somebody, you know, give up 3 innings and 5 or 3 runs in 5 innings, I'd rather see that be somebody else. But maybe a guy like Sean Newcomb or Tuki Toussaint can't even do that, you know, and they weren't showing much evidence that they could earlier in the season. So it's just, it's just the starting pitching is really a drag. It's honestly like I'm like more interested once the bullpen gets into the game. So right. Those are more pitchers I'm more confident in, more guys I feel like have more upside.
Well, before we get back, I do want to talk about Adam Duvall and some more positive things, but I do want to at least address this part of it. Do you think that this performance, this sample size, is enough to cause the philosophical nature of the Braves front office to change? Or do you think they'll write it off as an outlier?
Yeah, I don't
change.
Know. You can't get in between Alex Anthopoulos and his love for a 1-year contract for a aging pitcher or player in general. But
hey, we might finally seen that guy.
Yeah, I know. We should talk about Hamels, because it does sound like he's on the cusp of returning. But who knows how what they've learned in this season might change how they do things going forward, whether it's in free agency or trades or whatever. But it is interesting that Alex Anthopoulos has yet to really make like a blockbuster trade since he's been in Atlanta. He's made some nice trades in terms of picking up some relievers at the deadline last year, done some things that have really been like patchwork stuff, but hasn't really kind of changed any core part of the roster through a trade. So kind of still waiting on that. I think that Atlanta, that the Braves have the pieces in place to do something like that. Will, you talk about guys like Drew Waters, all these assets they have. But for whatever reason, they haven't really pulled the trigger on it. And, you know, when it comes to like a guy like Drew Waters, like we were talking about, it does make sense to trade him, especially if you're not seeing, if you don't foresee him being a regular member of this team for a year or two. It just doesn't make sense for me to like wait on him to kind of complete the trio of, you know, the immaculate outfield tree.
The utopia, I call it the utopian outfield.
That seems like an inefficient way to like manage the future of this club. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
It's an outfield I don't think will exist if the Braves have any intention on competing. Now, I'm not saying it will never exist. I'm not saying there won't be a day where Pache is in center and Waters is in left and Acuna's in right. And
but here's my problem with that, is that then that has guys playing out of position. I mean, if, in my personal opinion, I think Acuna's got to stay in center, because watching him yesterday in right field and every time
but,
he's
but
in
he's
right
had
field,
adventures in center too, Caleb.
I feel like, at least from what I've seen of him, he seems more comfortable when the ball is coming directly at him versus having to make a read and go, you know, far to one side or the other, because that little mix up that him and Ender had, and then I felt like there was another one in yesterday's game that just kind of had me baffled.
I'll just blame Ender for that one.
I mean, hey, he looked bad yesterday, and it's on. Like it's. Look, guys, you know I love Ender, but it's gotten to the point where, like, when you're watching a game where a team is scoring as many runs as they did, you know that second inning where the Braves scored 11 runs, Ender got two outs. Like, I was just like, oh. Man.
When you've lost Caleb Johnson, you've lost the room.
Yeah, I mean, he scored an RBI, which, like, clap it up. But, oh, man, it's bad, especially when we've gotten to this point. And, I mean, I'm still thinking, you know, we've got Pache is right there, and we're still not touching him. And I know we've moved on from that, but it is still just like, I don't understand.
It's so frustrating because I like Ender is one of my favorite players on the Braves. Like as a person, because like he's like really close with Joseph Martinez. Not real close, but like
yeah, but they're both Venezuelans. So
yeah, they're both Venezuelan. Me personally, like I was at Joseph Martinez's Golden Boot presentation a couple years ago, and like Ender and Ciarte surprised him and gave it to him, which was so cool. And he's just like a humble, nice guy. But yeah, I have the same frustration with him. Like whenever I see him in the lineup, it's like I'm triggered.
Let's talk about an outfielder that we all can get behind. Adam Duvall, woo-hoo, three home runs last night. He had three home runs 8 days before that. He's the first Brave to ever hit three home runs in a game twice in an Atlanta franchise history. Here's Freddie Freeman talking about Duvall.
Such an easy route for. Incredibly humble, works incredibly hard, and for what he has to go through on a daily basis to just be able to play Major League Baseball, just to get through life, and him coming into Major League Baseball and just performing at this kind of level, it's absolutely incredible, especially in a pandemic when he's high risk and, you know, he's just out here hitting three homer games like it's nothing every week.
I feel like this is a guy who, even with the play he's had over the last week and a half, I feel like somehow it's been overshadowed or overlooked, because he's just like having, you know, he's just like silently hitting bombs and home runs. I know people are starting to take notice now, but this is a guy who is a very streaky hitter, but he's going through one of these particular swings right now where he just can't miss at the plate.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
Well, I just want to throw in one thing. He's tied for seventh in baseball in homers. He's two off the league lead. Adam Duvall, just incredible. And last year, when he was mostly in Gwinnett, he was hitting homers then too. Like at the beginning of that minor league season, it was just him and Austin Riley just going off, and you kind of felt bad for Duvall because Austin Riley was the guy who got the call up And Duvall has been out there and just kept working hard, kept hitting those homers. I want to say he hit maybe the most homers of any Braves player last year. Talking about his minor league homers.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I remember last year there was such a clamoring to call him up, and everyone was just like, oh well, almost like they were talking about him the way they used to talk about Mike Hespet. You know, like oh he's a quad A player, or his power won't translate here. Well, he's proved them wrong.
And then he hit that big homer in the NLDS that won them game two against Flaherty, which was huge. And so I'm really happy for him to see what he's doing this year.
Well, and I feel like part of it is looking at his entire story of Freddie kind of touched on it in that soundbite. Like, I feel like not enough people know he's dealing with type 1 diabetes. Like, he's got the belt pack, you know, that he wears on him to give him proper insulin. And Freddie kind of touched on that last night about how he had talked about it in the past. The first time that he saw Duvall take his shirt off and he saw the insulin pack, and it was just like, wow, you're dealing with all of this stuff kind of going on. And I mean, he's playing at high risk, you know, because of that, with all of the COVID stuff going on. And so you honestly, like, just because he's a nice guy and he's dealing with all this stuff, you want to see him play well. And then for him to be doing this, and it's so funny because when you go to talk to him, notice we didn't play any Adam Duvall sound, because I'll be honest with you, it's mostly terrible, because Adam doesn't know how to talk about himself. Like, he's just like, ah, yeah, man, you know, I mean, it's just fun, you know, just helping the team out. Like, he's a terrible interview because he's such a nice guy and because he's so about the team and so selfless. And it's just an ultimate feel-good story, especially when you guys were talking about him playing in Gwinnett. Like, there's a reason why he was in Gwinnett, because he wasn't playing well. And so he got sent down. And then I was reading an article last night that give credit to, it's Sports Talk ATL, is the one that wrote it, talking about the trade that sent him to Atlanta was actually it was Alex Anthopoulos's first big trade, and it's so funny that I wouldn't even consider it that. It was they acquired Duvall for Lucas Sims, Matt Weisler, and Preston Tucker. So Lucas Sims still with the Reds, you know,
Whistler
is a decent relief pitcher. He's with the Twins, I believe. Decent relief pitcher, you know, kind of one inning kind of stuff. And then Preston Tucker is playing in the Korean Baseball League. So at the time, though, that those were some pretty big assets to get Adam Duvall, and he didn't produce immediately. But now it's cool to watch what he's doing now. I mean, seventh in home runs. That's crazy.
He's not like getting cheapies either.
He is
mashing these homers. It's crazy. I mean, the raw power that he possesses is impressive. And I feel like, I don't know, it feels to me like balls are flying out of the park even easier this year than they did last year, which obviously is going to help in that regard as well.
But. Yeah.
So this big road trip now for the Braves, their final one of the season, 10 games. Basically, they do the Baltimore-Washington corridor, and then they have their final three against the New York Mets before they return for a season-ending 7-game homestand against Miami and Boston. As it sits right now, they do not play a team 500 or better the rest of the way. I guess.
Crazy. Watch out for the Marlins, though.
Yeah, that's the other part of it.
Do not take them lightly.
Is the fact that the Marlins are that one team that's at the 500 mark exactly at 19-19. And the one thing I do think that is very advantageous for them is the fact that there are no doubleheaders left. So that's at least a positive for right now.
And the Marlins have a bunch.
For the Braves, and the fact that the Marlins are going to have to play a bunch of games here down the stretch. They don't have the Phillies anymore, do the Braves. I'm not asking you for an expectation, but is this division still the Braves to control, given all the pitching woes we've talked about, the fact that the lineup is back? How much of an effect does that have on the Braves keeping their stranglehold on the NL East?
Yeah, I think so. I fully expect this team to win the NL East. I mean, they've gone this far.
That's kind of my thing. Yeah.
It's like, I guess they'll just, you know, keep plodding along. You know, I don't think a lot of the games are going to be very pretty, but, well, I don't know. Is winning a game 11-7 pretty nowadays? I don't know, but, that's how I feel
it's
like
COVID.
The Braves
it's
are kind of getting.
Ball.
Yeah.
It's Rona ball.
Right. Well, so it's one of those. I'm very interested to see the next, I guess, five games, because I pulled up the schedule and it, you know, we've got our starting rotation for the next few games. So Erlen, Tomlin, Anderson, Wright, Malone. Like that doesn't sound like a recipe for success.
But Buzz, your girlfriend, woof.
Yeah, it's one of those. And that's going through Washington and starting in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, most likely, you know, unless they do something with Tommy Malone, if he does start, the following game could end up being, you know, our old buddy that we haven't actually seen this season.
Right.
So it's one of those, like, who knows, a week from now, when we come back together, the ship could be sinking, or it could be how the first half of the season's gone, is you kind of close your eyes a little bit and it works out all right.
Though you are playing a Nationals team that is far from settled with their own pitching right now. I mean, think about it right now. They've got Voth, Fetty, Corbin, and Scherzer to go in the four-game series that begins on Thursday night. And I feel like it's been forever since we've even seen Scherzer. Like, we missed him in the last series.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is something where, you know, you can get, I think, 3 out of 4 in this series as long as you continue to hit guys like Voth and Fetty, who you're not going to get a lot of length out of. And that Nationals bullpen is looking like the Nationals bullpen the first half of last year, or at least during the regular season of last year. Somehow, some way, that bullpen caught fire. I have no idea how or why or what, and it vaulted them to a championship. But they are looking very much like the Nationals of the first half of last year, the team that people basically had left in the dust with only 19 wins through 2 months of the season.
And to kind of take things back to the Braves starting pitching real quick, like a guy like Kyle Wright, who was everybody was really pissed at after his last start where he gave up a bunch of runs, wasn't a good outing for him. He's a perfect example of a guy that I would rather see him out there. Like, I want to see him pitching, because at least it gives us more data points as to who he is. And it's just more a more interesting watch at this point in the season, when it's not like a do or die situation where he has to win his start or else. So I like to see him out there. I think that it's going to be, but to what Caleb said, after this current turn in the rotation that's about to happen, after that, things are about to get really interesting, where you'll have Max Fried returning from an injury. Will he be the same guy? That will be something to watch. And then also, obviously, Cole Hamels will probably see him for the first time this season. And you just hope that he looks sharp. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the pictures of him or saw any of the video. I mean, he looks fit as hell. Like, he's got, like, no body
fat
on him.
Well, good.
I know. I mean, he's had plenty of time to work out.
Yeah, he's had plenty of time.
But, I mean, like, just looking at him, he looks like a guy that you would think would be able to, like, come in and do really well, especially considering his experience. But we'll see. It'll be interesting to watch.
The thing about Wright is that he's just got to junk the slider, man. Like, any time anyone has gotten any significant hits off of him, it's on that slider, which does absolutely nothing. Like, he just has to junk that pitch.
It was, like, I thought that he was right in what he said after the game, which was that the fastball command was a lot better in this game. But the fact is, like you said, Will, he didn't really have anything going for him other than the fastball. So guys were just sitting on a fastball, and they were just, you know, hitting pretty decently thrown fastballs. So, that's not going to get it done in big situations for the Braves, but you hope that maybe he can put something together. I wouldn't expect him to be starting in the postseason or anything, but just for his long-term development, you hope he can develop some secondaries.
He was right. Sorry, that one was just low-hanging fruit that I was like, all right, we're not gonna point it out. My question for you guys: at what point do you have to start setting your rotation for the playoffs? Like, getting it in order.
The homestand.
Miami series? Okay.
I think you need to see Hamels first.
True.
Yeah. I think, like, once you start to see those guys, once you get back home.
He's not built up yet, though, right?
He's not. No, he's not. He's not. But I think even if he's not stretched out to his maximum extent, if you feel like you can get productive innings out of him, you'll roll him out there for the playoffs as a starter.
He's got to be better than Tommy Malone.
Yeah, for sure. It's crazy that the Braves start their last road trip of the season today. That's just insane to me.
Well, this was fun. It was, you know, for a day that was so positive yesterday, I felt like we found more negative things to talk about just because I feel like the frustration.
It had been a negative week overall, I think, up until yesterday. Yeah. It had been pretty
bad. The weekend
was
so frustrating, and the first couple of games of this week were so frustrating, and last night it was like, oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is where all those runs were. So we'll see how the Baltimore-Washington-New York trip goes, and then the finale back at home between Miami and Boston. Just five opponents left on the schedule right now for the Braves, which, like you said, Joe, is rather insane. We'll continue to break it down for you. We'll be back a week from now on Thursday the 17th. That'll be the last off day for the Braves, and that is the final travel day between the road trip and the homestand. We'll try and break it all down there, or at least between the parts of the road trip, actually, between Washington and New York. So we'll be previewing that final road series in New York before we get it back home here for Miami and Boston. Continue to listen to the Batter Up app, or Batter Up podcast, rather, on the radio.com app. 92.9 The Game, radio.com is the place you can find it, or wherever you get your podcast. For Joe and Caleb, I'm Will. This has been Batter Up, a 92.9 The Game and radio.com exclusive.